There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1050, June 30th, 2024. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say the sound of music in Austria was Dijon Prenois 1979. Same old song, but with a different theme. Another timely text message from Pedro de la Rosa, and we make a Pennsylvania pit stop. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, sir.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Max says, "No way, Jose," to Norris making contact the old Max way. George in the right place at the right time. More bad karma for Charles Leclerc. The harder he tries, the worse it gets. Haas, they get a big payoff finishing in the top six. Amazing. And what is up with all the penalties? I mean, I almost want to do a timeout to give the FIA a break, because they're just throwing them at the wall, and it is an amazing thing to see. And this week's interview, we have a brief chat with Gunther Steiner. We bring you Jill, Desiree's old roommate from Penn State. And just a reminder, everybody, that yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. Nas, you got to give it to Max to finally bring back some excitement, because this sailing into the distance was getting boring, and it was beautiful. It was the old Max back in town. And my favorite part is, I like how he always picks on British drivers.
Oh man, what a race. The humanity, the penalty, the loneliness and aggressiveness of long-distance runner is such that Max, even with a punctured tire, put Lando on the grass. That is taking it to the max, literally and figuratively. Like the two very greats before him, Senna and Schumacher, Max cannot accept and handle that he can be beaten. Maybe that's what puts him in the same league. You know, I was thinking of a race, Mr. Rogers. Once upon a time, you remember Mr. Nigel Mansell was black flagged during the Portuguese Grand Prix, and he kept racing, and he was running behind Ayrton Senna, who I'm sure must have known that Mansell, the car behind, has been black flagged, but he kept racing him hard, and of course, into a fast corner, they collided and, you know, went into the kitty litter. So some people are not programmed for P2, and maybe that's why we love them so much. In life during wartime, sometimes you have to lose the battle to win the war, but this is not in Max's operator's manual. With a little help from my friend named DRS, it was obvious Lando was not going to give up trying to take the lead, and it was equally obvious Max was not going to give it up till the bitter end. The dicing between the two was very, very interesting for those watching at the Red Bull Ring and those watching in faraway places on telly. Now, talking of penalties, I am really sick and tired of these. Lando got a 5-second penalty for track limits, and Max got 10-second penalty for causing a collision. And you know what is interesting this day and age, Mr. Rogers? Before the Formula One race, also on Saturday, I watch both the sprint and feature races in Formula 2 and Formula 3 races, and it was the same deal there. One after another, there was pop-up message so-and-so under investigation. This will be reviewed. That will be reviewed. I mean, it is really, really ruining the taste of watching a race. This is motor racing at the very top level. This is not great train robbery where you need to keep an eye on every boxcar, every mile off the track. What say you?
It's true. It's become absolutely ridiculous. Like, when you watch a vintage race, the first thing you realize, wow, there are no penalties, and we've had 2 hours of great racing. So I am really bewildered in the direction that the FIA are going, and I think the manufacturers, the teams should have a meeting and say, hey, let's nature take its course here, because it's just, it's all, the problem is it's so constant that it's become funny and they're being ridiculed and it's losing its je ne sais quoi. So I think that's their biggest problem, is their sense of reality, and people will start questioning, do we need La Fédération Internationale de l'Automobile?
Well, I don't know what they're trying to do, but I mean, you know, I have this race on mute right now, okay? Here comes another pop, FIA steward investigating this. This is constant now in any race. So basically what happens if you watch a race, Sunday afternoon or whatever your local time is, you know, Monday morning when you wake up, the results may be different. So this is getting ridiculous. But going back to the fantastic finale we had, DC made an interesting observation in the closing stages as Lando was trying very hard to take the lead. He said, Lando, you have the speed, you have the talent, you need to battle Max wheel to wheel now. And that's easier said than done. Later, DC made a comment, welcome to the Premier League, Lando. And, you know, this is what, you know, hard racing should be. You remember the Brazilian Grand Prix 2021 when Lewis and Max went both way off the track? I mean, that's called, that, to me, that is the essence of motor racing, not just a penalty one after another. And, you know, Pastor Maldonado is no longer in Formula One. So I don't think we need all these stewards to throw. Maybe they have a competition. You know, like they say about cops, they have to meet a certain quota. Maybe these people need to have some quota met also. But it's really, really BS, to be honest with you. After the race, Lando was asked if he will talk to Max. And he, of course, was a little pissed off. So he said no, because he has nothing to say, as Max was in the wrong. Asked the same question, Max said, yes, we will talk, but right now we need to cool down, which is the sensible thing to do. But now we have to see if the lovey-dovey that has been displayed between the two will be seen at Silverstone. And one thing I will say about Max, not that Lando is innocent and perfect, nobody is, but Max, to me, when people were complaining about him, I just, you know, hey, this is a new guy on the block, he's very quick. They knew what was coming in terms of a tremendous talent. But when a guy who does not speak, even when he wins a race, Kimi Raikkonen, when he started complaining that Max is moving under braking, and I thought maybe there is some smoke and some tinder fire here. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's what happened here. And because at one time, Lando Norris did complain he's moving and we're going to have a big collision. So Max is going to do what Max is very good at. And I think this absolute ruthlessness that he has, and he's not the first one, and I'm sure he's not the last one, I think we're going to see more and more of this as competition catches up. And I cannot wait for the 2026 season where he may not have the advantage. That's my two Dutch guilders on this.
I think it's lovely. I was happy to finally see something like this happen. It's the way, listen, Lando is desperate to beat Max. He knew that Max wasn't going to let him by without a fight. I mean, he knew that because he's watched Max race all his life. So all these people with the rule book and these surprises, everybody knows that once you get to the front of the spear and you're dealing with Max, you got to have some testicles and you're going to show who's boss. I mean, Max, that's what he's been doing all his career, even in karting. So I'm glad Lando got a little bloodied, and now he's going to be a little more testicular. So we have more exciting racing. This has opened the can of worms where everybody wants to be machismo.
And George has opened a can of whoop-ass. He has not now done a JB. He has won two races against Lewis Carl Hamilton, and Lewis has zero wins against him as a teammate. And that's what JB did when he joined McLaren. Remember those days?
Oh, yeah. They're texting each other right now.
Yes, exactly. Okay, sir, I think it's time for a quickie on Quali. What say you?
I do say that occasionally. And let's bring Pedro in as well.
Oh, absolutely. Too much hoopla and irrational exuberance after Q1. The big story was the closest ever Q1 in the history of Formula One. Then Max gave everybody a wake-up call and delivered a, what I call, a mighty fine demolition derby on the competition. 0.4 second ahead of Man sharing the front row with him, and almost a second faster than your own teammate. The new generation of young whippersnappers are not going to beat this 26-year-old in an equally competitive car. As we saw today, they need a car that is minimum 0.3, 0.4 second faster than the Red Bull to knock Max from the top of the totem pole. You know, after the race, this guy, super hyper Davide Valsecchi, you know, he's one of the presenters on F1 TV, and he speaks like Father Guido Sarducci, so it's a lot of fun listening and watching him. They asked him about pass and where they collided, and he pointed to the track and to the whole circuit. He says, everybody around the circuit knows that if you're trying to pass Max Verstappen for the lead, you have to make the pass of your life. That's how difficult it is. And I'm going to tell you, if you put K-Mag in a fast car, it's going to be this, maybe even worse than that. And we have seen this when these situations arise. I do think and believe that there are two geezers on the grid who are capable of sticking it to Max in an equally competitive car. And I think we both know who these two are. Monsieur Leclerc looked like he was driving a John Deere. Nice guy and a great racing talent, but if he thinks he has a problem now, another one is coming next season at a seat near you. Anything you like or disliked in Quali, sir?
Oh, it all makes me so happy and wonderful and fuzzy inside. But no, Leclerc, I mean, what was going on? What is happening with Ferrari? But I know they're doing the best they can. It's getting the heat in the Pirellis. And of course, Max is the problem. But the way Max put down that final lap, 0.4 ahead of Lando, boom, he said it was a statement. And where was Perez again? Obviously, this car is not fun to drive.
Who?
El Mexicano, hombre. So, yeah, it's fascinating. But I was really happy for Carlos Sainz, who's getting the shaft, literally, at the end of the season from Ferrari. So for him to get on the podium and stick it to him, it was great.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of what is happening at Ferrari, I'm not sure even if they know what's going on there. But I was thinking, you know, maybe at Monza in qualifying, they will rattle Max's cage. And when the race is ending on lap 50-51, I think they will get a wake-up call by then from Max. So, you know, hopefully they will win a race or two again. That will be nice, very good for the sport and for everybody. But let's take a look at the sprint race. Max and Lando on front row. The 24-lap sprint race was reduced by one lap due to an aborted start. It's a short lap at the Red Bull Ring, but after one lap, Max was ahead by half a second. And that pretty much set the tone for the sprint race and the feature race on Sunday. At least for me. Lap 3, Lando set the fastest lap and was all over Max. And once again, we borrow a phrase from Mr. David Hobbs, like white on rice. Lap 5, Lando did a Max on Max, but immediately Max returned the favor and Lando lost second place to his teammate, Oscar Piastri. By lap 12, Max was out of DRS zone for Piastri, and that was Das Vidania for rest of the day. GR was able to pass Carlito for fourth, but his teammate LCH was stuck behind his own red car for 2025, like TC and Bernoldi in Monte Carlo back in the day. Once the checkered flag fell, LCH stayed behind the prancing horse of Sainz Jr., and Max stayed ahead of the two papaya cars. Now, one bright spot from the sprint race was Logan Sargeant finally out-qualified his teammate Alexander Albon for the first time. This is great news for a boy from Boca Raton, but I think it's a case of too late the hero. Any comments on the sprint race, sir?
I thought it was very exciting, especially when Lando got around Max, and this is the move I expected to happen in the feature race. But, and of course, with DRS, and especially in this short track, DRS, man, you get those DRS trains. So, yeah, I knew Max would take the lead back again really quickly, and that's what happened, and he never let go. But there were a lot of DRS trains on this track because of the short lap. We used to call them Trulli trains, and back in the day, we called it the Peace Train.
Max is a master of many things in racing, but the thing I really, really love about him is when he outbreaks and takes the lead, whether he's on the inside or the outside. That is like pure magic, man. That is absolutely gorgeous. Would you agree?
I totally agree. It just makes you feel really, really good. Now, the other thing I like about this whole package is we've got the Orange Army, we've got the Dutch, we've got Verstappen from the Netherlands, and of course, all of the television coverage and the pundits are all British. So every time he picks on a British guy, he's going to get it in a double helping.
And where is the next race?
Hallelujah, baby!
Yes. So we'll see how it works out. Okay, now we go to the main race. Happened a few hours ago. 19 drivers took off as the lights went off. Chinese driver Guan Yu Zhou did a takeout from the pit lane. He was the only one on hard tires. Max not doing a second a lap faster thing, but was pulling away right from the opening lap. Top 5 at the end of the first lap, Max, Lando, George, Lewis and Sainz Jr. And we had Monsieur Charles Leclerc in the pits with a damaged front wing. LCH passed his teammate on lap 3, but it only lasted for one corner. By lap 5, Max was already over 2 seconds ahead of Norris. And this was the beginning of the snooze fest of the race. Piastri passing Perez for 6th on lap 7 was interesting, if not surprising. Lap 10, Max was over 4 seconds ahead of Lando. The next lap, Ricciardo and K-Mac were the first to come in for tire change. Lap 20, the gap between the two was 6 seconds. Russell further 4 seconds behind Norris. Now, at this stage, Clark, I was just convinced this is how it's going to pan out. You know, it will be follow the leader, end of the story. I had no idea what excitement awaited us. Then your man, your Dios, Alonso did a chop suey on Guan Yu Zhou on lap 21 and was given a 10-second penalty. Any comment on that, sir? Your perfect man made a mistake, finally.
Well, it was a mistake, but we're talking the back of the grid. I don't want to say anything with chop suey, so...
The thing is, you know, these stewards have to eat also, though. They have to earn a living.
I understand, and so I like that, Nasser. That's a really good take on we could have bets by what they comment on and who they penalize. We could bet on what they're going to have for lunch.
Yeah. Lewis came into the pits and leave it to Piastri. This was beautiful. This is what it has really come down to. So Lewis comes into the pits and Piastri reports to his team. He crossed the white line on entry to the pit lane. And I'm thinking, you know, his Aussie mate Mark Webber was right. Formula One has become nanny state. You know, Zach Brown is very good at getting sponsorship. That's how he got to McLaren. I think it's time for him to approach Huggies. Chrome and Huggies on McLaren would look very good.
Beautiful. Beautiful, Nasser. But it is ludicrous. I mean, and they all do it now. It's like, oh my God, I long for Fangio.
Yeah, it's amazing. It doesn't matter who it is. Max, he's leading. He'll complain. Lando is second, and he's not even trying to make an attempt. He'll make a cute comment on Max, and it's just, like, amazing. But wait, there's more. Lap 24, top two into the pits with Max suffering a slow pit stop by Red Bull standards of 2.7 seconds. Earlier in the season, they set the fastest pit stop so far of the year at 1.9 seconds. Lap 30, Max ahead by 7 seconds, and I just knew Lando is not going to cover 7 seconds on this guy. When the race is dull and a snooze fest, who are you going to call for Pontiac excitement? Of course, Bruno Famans, ball busters at Alpine. This is really beautiful. Lap 36, both Gasly and Ocon passed Alonso and then banged wheels with each other. What a surprise. Question is, when will these two learn? I think Bruno Famans would have gone ballistic if one of the cars had to drop out of the race. And this is my two French francs. Tell me what you think. I really think Alpine should do what McLaren did to Ricciardo and Ferrari did to Kimi. Pay Ocon not to drive for the rest of the season so there's no lawsuit. And put Jack Doohan in the car for for rest of the season, and I'm sure Jack Doohan will drive for free. This will prepare him very well for 2025. What say you, amigo?
Of course, that makes perfect sense, Nasser. But for us people that like to giggle and laugh a lot, I mean, you gotta admit, the laughs that they provide are just wonderful. And Alonso, after all that, goes, wow. I'm telling you, there's a lot of funny stuff going on at the back of the grid.
Yeah, I remember some years ago, Alonso, I think it was he, passed Carlos Sainz and said bye-bye. Remember that on the team radio? I did not hear it on the broadcast, but it was mentioned by a few outlets that when Gasly finally passed Ocon, he said ciao-ciao. So it's just, yeah, it's very nice back of the pack. Lap 40, Max advantage over Norris, 8 seconds, and Norris had a similar advantage over third place Russell. Sainz Jr. and LCH completed the top five with Piastri 6. Lap 52, Max's second slow pit stop. This was the beginning of the end of the snooze fest and the start of what I had a strong inkling may end up in slaughter on 10th Avenue. Were you surprised that both of these people tangle, or were you expecting one of them will win?
Well, to be honest with you, no, I was not surprised, because when Max is slowly, I mean, he's very polite through the last few races, you know, he's very polite, still getting pole, but you could tell he has to put in 110% for that pole when before 90% was fine. So you could tell some frustration has been bubbling to the top. And Lando was messing with a pissed off Max. And that's the worst. If he's a giggly Max, he'll take P2. But if he's pissed, then, and then I knew Norris. And Norris is sensitive. You know, his feelings were, I knew there was going to be crying involved.
Do you remember some years ago, Sebastian Vettel in a Ferrari fought for the championship with Lewis Hamilton and then made a lot of mistakes, spun quite a few times. Remember the big crash he had with Kimi and Max in Singapore? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The pressure was on.
Yeah, I think what is happening here is Max is so focused on just winning. And it's like, you know, Prost used to say about Senna that I don't want to be fastest every corner, every lap, every test session, every qualifying. And I think Max is from that cloth. You know, he has to be the winner of whatever the hell he's doing. And, I mean, if he had finished second today, he would have lost only 5 or 6 points. I mean, he's you know, people talk about being lucky. He's lucky he was in the point. He did finish in the points, right? Had Norris won the race, 25 points, and Max had not finished, that would have made a big dent in the championship lead. But I don't think that with the given respective packages that Max has to worry about his championship. But it's always a good idea to, just like Lewis Hamilton, had he finished behind Alonso in 2007 in the season finale, he would have done that nobody has ever done, win a championship in his rookie Formula One season. So I guess, remember a couple of races ago when Toto called George Focus. And I heard something interesting on the telecast, which was the F1 TV broadcast with Davide Valsecchi and Jack. I don't remember, he does a very good job. And DC was there too. And one of them mentioned that, you know, earlier in the race, when Lando was given a 5-second penalty, and they were saying that Max was never advised of that or informed of that. I don't know if that's correct or not, but I think if Max knew that this guy had a 5-second penalty, there would have been no need to race so hard with him. What's your take on this?
No, you're absolutely right. He did not know about the 5-second penalty. Hence, if he had, this whole thing could have been avoided simply. But I'm pro Max fighting all the way to the end, like the big boys.
No, yeah, that's what we want. You know, like the Gilles Villeneuve, keep fighting till the checkered flag. You know, I'll tell you one thing, one of my everlasting memories. Once upon a time, when Jacques Villeneuve, I think the season he won the championship, he won a race at Nürburgring. I don't know if it was the Luxembourg Grand Prix or German Grand Prix or European Grand Prix. And coming out of the last corner, it's not a long run at the new Nürburgring. He had the race won fair and square. But I will never forget the second car that came. You could tell that this guy is not going to give up. till he crosses the checkered flag. And that was, surprise, surprise, Michael Schumacher in a red Ferrari. So, of course, you know, race fans, which is who we are, we love this kind of never give up. I remember when Fittipaldi finished fourth at the 74 U.S. Grand Prix, Watkins Glen, of course. He was battling for the championship with Clay Regazzoni. And all he had to do was, like, finish fourth and he'll be world champion. And that's what he did. And I remember at that time, Stirling Moss went ballistic, that what kind of a Grand Prix racer he is, a champion, that he's driving to four so he can be world champion. So, you know, different strokes for different folks. But we, the peeps, the fans, we love a good Dijon Prenois 79. Don't we, Mr. Rogers?
Absolutely. It was great. I can't wait for Silverstone. I mean, it's going to be awesome. And not only that, but finally, the adrenaline levels are going to start peaking. Lando, all of a sudden, you know, he's going to wear maybe two pairs of underwear. He's going to feel good because he knows he's got the speed and he's already contacted Max once. So he feels a little badge of accomplishment that I have been hit by the man. So I'm really pumped up. I think this is good for Formula One. And let's not forget, your buddy, one of your favorite drivers, is Yuki Tsunoda, apparently being caught with a terrible remark against handicapped people.
This is just, you know, I think the Committee for Political Correctness is the same committee that is dishing out all these penalties. I mean, you cannot even use English language words now. Is that what it's coming to? I read that, okay, and I thought it was against Yuki Tsunoda, right? So I thought he used something about his ethnic background or something like that. They're both pretty much of the same stock anyway. So that's what I thought. And then I listened to it and I said, you gotta be kidding me. But Yuki, you know, he has been like this forever. And it's just, it's a political correctness absolutely gone haywire, which brings me to your question, where was Checo Perez? I mean, did you not like the great fight he put up against the Haas of Nico Hülkenberg?
It's insane. Well, and Nico is such a good mood. You know, he's always getting first-class seats now. Yeah, I don't know where Perez is. I'm just not quite sure. I think they've cut him off on the in-flight burrito. He's just not getting enough spicy food.
You know, after recording, I'm going for lunch and I'm going to have a grounded burrito in his memory. I mean, it's, but then you have to understand he's up against Max. But, you know, against Max, if you're, let's say 1.1 seconds slower and you're still second or third on the podium, I think the team can live with that. And most fans will understand. But duking out with K-Mag and Yuki Tsunoda, that's pretty sad.
Yeah, it's very tough. And even with all that, what happened to Max and everybody else, I think he was still over a second behind Max finishing. So I'm not sure. Perez has issues, but he's signed until 2026. So
Dr. Marco knows how to take care of that.
Indeed. Chop, chop.
Yeah, exactly. Tales from the Vienna woods. And they have very good wood there. And they have very good chop, chop material also. And nobody does it better than Dr. Marco. And I cannot wait to sit in his office on July 9th and have a chit-chat with him.
Just don't spill your green tea.
Yes. Or my Monster energy drink. Shall I walk into his office with a can of Monster drink? Hey, nice to meet you.
Perfect.
No. I'm going to listen to the stewards and, you know, take care of business. Okay, sir, shall we take a break?
Good idea, Nass. I am very suave. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Felipe Massa. You are listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. In now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Today we present our new segment called Pennsylvania Pit Stop. And topic of the day is Rain Man. So please welcome Miss Jill Albers to F1 Weekly Familia.
Hello, F1 Weekly Familia members. My name is Jill. I'm originally from Pennsylvania, and I now reside in Tampa, Florida. And this is my first contribution to the show. The story is Rain Men, Great Drives in the Wet. Let's start with the 1968 German Grand Prix.
You can call it the Grand Prix that nearly got lost. Lost in fog and torrential rain, 3,000 feet up in the Eiffel Mountain. Now in these nightmare conditions, Jackie Stewart's Matra Ford leads the field in the German Grand Prix at an average speed of nearly 87 miles an hour.
At the 14.2-mile-long Green Hell, there were many great drivers in this race, like three-time world champion Jack Brabham, Formula One and Indy 500 champion Graham Hill, and John Surtees, the only man to be a world champion on two and four wheels, plus American legend Dan Gurney. Also in this race was a driver from Scotland who had won only three races before, Jackie Stewart. He qualified sixth. The race took place in heavy rain, and Stewart took the lead on lap 1 of 14. He not only dominated all 14 laps of the track, he drowned the competition, winning by an unbelievable margin of over 4 minutes, driving a Matra Ford. Graham Hill was second in his Lotus. From the longest track, we go to the longest race, the 2011 Canadian Grand Prix. This was wet and wild for over 4 hours. Drivers complaining of no visibility, aquaplaning, and the need for a safety car. Safety car did lead the opening 5 laps and was deployed again after Jenson Button banged wheels with his teammate, Lewis Hamilton, and put him out of the race. On lap 26, heavy rain brought out the red flag. Button had another wheel-banging incident on lap 37, this time putting Fernando Alonso out of action. JB himself dropped to last position in the 70-lap race. In the closing stages, Red Bull driver Sebastian Vettel, who had started from pole position, looked set for victory. Button, who is excellent in changing conditions, by then had climbed all the way back of the grid to second place. His tenacity paid off on the last lap of the race. Race leader Vettel went wide on turn 6, and JB did not need a second invitation and took a remarkable victory. Next, rain in Spain. After winning 2 championships with Benetton, Michael Schumacher joined the famous Ferrari team in 1996. The car was not very competitive. They say rain is the great equalizer, and rain in Spain gave him the opportunity to shine when there was no sun in the sky. He qualified 3rd, and at the end of the opening lap was in 6th position. His teammate, Eddie Irvine's off-road excursion, prompted Schumacher to 5th. Damon Hill did him the same favor, and Schumacher was up to 4th on lap 5 and set the fastest lap. Sign of things to come. He passed Berger for 3rd and was in close pursuit of Jean Alesi and race leader JV. On lap 8, Schumacher sailed past Alesi and immediately started hounding JV for the lead. Lap 12, Schumacher took the lead, and from then on, each and every lap, it was adios amigos. His first lap in the lead was 4 seconds faster than JV.
Schumacher was more pleasantly lonely at front, almost a minute ahead of Alesi. The Ferrari men were getting ready, and indeed Schumacher never set a foot wrong. He scored a superb win in his 7th race with the team.
It was one of the greatest drives in the rain in Formula One history, as the German driver took his first victory in the red car. He finished 45 seconds ahead of 2nd place driver Alesi. Sebastian Vettel and the Monza Magic, the 2008 Italian Grand Prix. To win your first race and become the youngest Formula One winner is great. To do that in a car that has no business winning is pure magic. That magic was delivered from pole position in a Toro Rosso by then 21-year-old Sebastian Vettel. An absolute command performance saw Sebastian lead 49 of the 53 laps. Drivers like Lewis Hamilton, Fernando Alonso, Kimi Raikkonen were left in the Monza mist by the young German driver. Seb would go on to win 4 championships in a row for Red Bull. Ayrton Senna, the 1985 Portuguese Man-O-War. Senna made his Formula One debut in 1984 with back-of-the-grid Toman team. In the reign of Monte Carlo, he served notice of his immense talent by finishing a close second. This came on full display, again in the rain, in only his second drive with a competitive car, Lotus. Drivers in the race included legends and champions like Prost, Piquet, Lauda, and Rosberg. Even amongst this caliber of champions, Senna was on a different level. The race was stopped at the 2-hour mark. The only driver in a field of 26 cars to finish on the same lap as Senna was Ferrari's Patrick Tambay. He was over a minute behind the race winner. Lewis Hamilton, a 2008 British Grand Prix, a royal performance in the rain to win his home Grand Prix for the first time. Lewis qualified fourth. His Finnish teammate, Kovalainen, took pole position for the first time in his career. At the start of the race, Kovi had company of his teammate, as Lewis had passed both Kimi and Mark to be second by the time they got to turn one. Kovi's glory lasted for 4 laps. Dive for the lead by Lewis came on lap 5, and then it was hasta la vista till the end of the race after 60 laps. Margin of victory for LCH was 1 minute and 8 seconds over second place Nick Heidfeld. Kovi finished 5th. This was the 7th victory in Formula One for Lewis. Today, his total is an all-time high 103 Grand Prix victories. Finally, the mother of all dancing in the rain, or we call it Samba in the Shower. Yes, we are talking about Donington 1993 and the man with the yellow helmet. Senna made 4 pit stops in this wet and wild race to take the victory. The only driver to finish on the same lap was 1 minute and 23 seconds behind Damon Hill, who had started from pole position. It is the opening lap of this race where Senna went from 5th at the start to leading the race before the opening lap was over. That is now called the lap of the gods. Thank you for listening. This is Jill for F1 Weekly, signing off till next time.
Jill, keep up the good work, and thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Back to you, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. And some driver signing news. Pierre Gasly staying at Alpine on a multi-year contract. This was no surprise after Ocon got the guillotine. The other driver signing news was a shocker. Aston Martin has renewed Lance Stroll's contract. Now, this happened after Pedro de la Rosa sent a text message to team owners saying he has inside information that this driver is about to unleash his immense talent and is even faster than Fernando Alonso in some corners. And the team owner responded immediately, "Pedro, sign him up. I will mail his paycheck and your bonus check pronto from Toronto." Man, talk about power of performance. What say you on Lance Stroll getting some more years?
Well, it's his team, and Lance says he's going to become world champion for Papa. Lance is going to learn that from Alonso. So by 2027, when they cut the umbilical cord and Alonso goes to the old folks' home, Lance will be right there fighting for the world.
Any idea who will be Gasly's teammate next season?
Gasly?
His teammate.
Right. You know, I have no idea, to be honest with you. I mean, it could be Mick Schumacher, but I don't think he's going to do that well in the test, so we just sort of have to hang out. I'm hoping Doohan gets the nod.
Yeah, I think they should promote Doohan, but there's a lot of talk that they're trying to get, since Flavio is there, Carlos Sainz Jr., but we will see how it works out. Okay, sir, now we move on to feeder series to Formula 1, Formula 2 at the Red Bull Ring. At last, first win of the season for Mr. Oliver Bearman, Ollie Bearman as he's called, in the sprint race on Saturday. A lot of people are very bullish on him. There are reports that he may be announced as a Haas F1 driver for 2025 at this weekend's British Grand Prix. Sunday's feature race winner was Brazilian rookie Gabriel Bortoleto. He is a McLaren junior and is in his first season of F2, and he is doing very well. And last year he was a Formula 3 champion, so I think we may have a... And you know, on the post-race podium, he thanked Senna's family for help. So, well, maybe he could be the next Brazilian world champion. From Formula 2, we go to baby sister Formula 3. Sprint winner on Saturday was Bulgarian Nikola Solov. He is in good hands. He is in the Alpine driver development program and managed by A4 Management, A as in machismo. Feature race winner from UK was Luke Browning. Gabriele Mini from Sicily was second. And third from Sweden was Ferrari junior Dino Biganovic. I have not seen this race, but I would like to watch it sometime today. MotoGP from Assen in the Netherlands. Francesco Pecco Bagnaia won for the third consecutive year at this track. And he also won Saturday's sprint race. Okay, sir, in more news, Audi's Formula One engine program is running full steam ahead. They have recruited several senior engineers from various manufacturers. The engine program is based in a town called Neuburg, Germany. Audi's chief technical officer for its F1 power unit, Stefan Dreyer, says the manufacturer has simulated running, this is interesting, their developmental power unit on several Grand Prix circuits with long full-throttle sections. The first ever Audi entry in Formula One will appear on the grid in 2026. Audi, previously known as Auto Union, had a glorious history in Grand Prix racing in the days of Mustachio Man. Their drivers included names like Bernd Rosemeyer and Tazio Nuvolari. Okay, sir, we now move on to a look back at the Austrian Grand Prix and some major motorsport moments in the land of Mozart and our favorite Dr. Marco. The first ever Austrian Grand Prix, and that is a Formula One Championship Grand Prix, took place on an airfield at Zeltweg. Lorenzo Bandini became a one-hit wonder by taking the checkered flag in his Ferrari. This was the only Grand Prix, Championship Grand Prix ever held at this airfield, and this town is just down the road from the Grand Prix takes place now, and that town is called Spielberg. In 1971, a Swiss driver, Joe Siffert, took his first Grand Prix victory at the old Österreichring, which was a fantastic track, fast and flowing, and he was driving a BRM. Another one-hit wonder from the Austrian Grand Prix was Italian Vittorio Brambilla, who won the race in 1975 driving an orange Beta Tools March, a beautiful color scheme on that car. It was in Sunday's warm-up session for this race that Mark Donohue had his fatal accident after a tire failure. The following year, 1976, we had another one-hit wonder, this time for the team, and the team was Penske Racing. This turned out to be Roger Penske's only Grand Prix success, and of course, the driver was a gentleman who was a featured interview person on our 1000 podcast, John Watson. In 1977, the one-hit wonder for a team continued with Alan Jones from Australia giving Don Nichols, who was from Santa Cruz, California area, his shadow team their one and only victory. Ronnie Peterson won the Austrian Grand Prix for the second time in 1978, and this turned out to be his final Grand Prix victory before his tragic accident at Monza, 1978. In 1980, R. Nige made his Formula One debut thanks to Colin Chapman. In typical Mansell fashion, he kept going despite receiving serious burns from a leaking fuel tank. 1982, a race I remember very well, one of the closest finishes in Grand Prix racing, when the Lotus of Elio De Angelis barely beat by an inch or two the Williams of Keke Rosberg. And finally, at last, a home victory for Austrian driver, and this came in 1984, when Niki Lauda won the race in a Porsche powered McLaren. Sir, before we move on to famous last words, anything you want to say about the past weekend, future weekend?
Future weekends, no, but past weekend was awesome. I enjoyed every minute of this race, and the sprint race was fun to watch. I'm glad we're on a triple header, and we have Silverstone next week, which is the heart of the Formula One community. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity for their fellow British drivers. You never know. Maybe Lewis Hamilton.
Well, you know, given the performance of Lando Norris and George Russell winning the race, can you imagine the fever at the British Grand Prix? The ticket prices are very high. I had a chance to go to this race. I was looking at the ticket prices. They were out of control. And now I think they would be even more in the stratosphere. So thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, even Lewis Hamilton mentioned trying to hint to the Grand Prix organizers that the prices are too high. And they said, huh, well, that's too bad. Keep a stiff upper lip, which is really uncool for the Joe Sixpack community.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, you know, I was shocked when I went to the Austrian Grand Prix last year and I was able to get a grandstand ticket for $250. That was dollars, not even euros. I, to be honest with you, was convinced that this is a fake ticket or something is wrong. It's not grandstand. And, you know, it had to be downloaded on cell phone. But when I went there, I had a feeling that this is not going to be a valid ticket. And I was shocked when I showed my ticket and the guy says, go ahead. So $250 is very different than $850. And have you seen the prices of tickets at the Las Vegas Grand Prix?
No, because this is way out of my range, Nasser. I stick with Denny's and a Grand Slam.
Oh, you forgot Wiener Schnitzel.
Jawohl, my Herr.
No, they are talking. I mean, I saw on a news item that general admission are starting at $1,000.
Of course. I mean, well, I know that there are people that keep $1,000 on their money clip just for chump change.
Oh, yes. There is a market for everything, and that's why they are doing this, you know. A few years ago when I went to the Austin Grand Prix and my nephew was with me, when we parked our car, you know, they have all these ranches. You park your car and there are people trying to sell tickets. It was like $1,000, $800. And I said to my nephew, you know, we'll just wait, you know, half hour because track is right next to the main road. So 15, 20 minutes before I approached one of the guys, so his price came down to $200 per ticket. So we bought a couple of them. And then when we got the tickets, you know what it says on the ticket? Complimentary ticket, no face value. They were trying to sell a free ticket for $8,000. So very, very interesting. Okay, sir, it's time for our man Gunther Steiner to step into the, make a brief appearance in the F1 Weekly Palatial Studios. So thank you for listening and peace out.
Thank you.
Folks, I'm here with Mr. Gunther Steiner. First, a lot of upheavals in Formula One. Lewis going to Ferrari. Good for him, good for the sport. What's your take on it?
I think it's good for the sport and for him. I mean, where he's now, I think in life is good for him. It will be his last station in his career, I think. And it's always nice to finish that one at Ferrari.
And Adrian Newey leaving Red Bull, that came as a shocker. What's your take on what happened and why he's leaving? And most important, where is he going?
I don't know what happened that he wants to leave, but I think it's as well. He's there since 18 years and maybe was just changing something. I think he doesn't know himself where he's going next.
Okay. And when are we going to see you back in Formula One with the team?
I don't know that as well. I know as much as Adrian Newey where he's going next, I don't know where I'm going next.
Okay. Last question I'm going to ask in Gunther Steiner style, and I hope you take it well. If Sergio Perez does not win a race this year all season long, will you call him a wanker?
No, I wouldn't call him Sergio a wanker. I mean, first of all, I think he will be racing all year long. He will be racing the whole year long.
Yeah, but what if he does not win a race? Sergio Perez.
He's not a wanker because Max is so good. You know, to beat Max, you need to have a special day. And obviously, maybe Max has got a problem and then he can win a race. But for sure, Checo is not a wanker.
No, I think finishing second to Max is no shame.
No, exactly, it's no shame. It's the same opinion for you. He's a very good driver.
That's the good thing.